who is in Ohio will tell us how Ohio uses the guide.
Good afternoon. No more energy. Good afternoon. I know I'm the last speaker.
Still afternoon.
I first like to give you greetings from the great state of Ohio, our health director. I also like to thank Dr. Hutchins for inviting me, as well as Dr. Susan Geckler and Dr. Steve Owens, who are directors of Health Promotion Education, who makes it possible for me to get to this meeting. One of the things I'd like to do, I don't have any disclosures I need to talk about, so what I'd like to do is talk about food deserts and how we actually use information and data to really be able to come up with some very specific strategies and recommendations to deal with this problem. And also, in the presence of that, I would like to talk about some of the tools that we could use for program evaluation. One of the things is, I was preparing for this talk is I ran across some information from Dr. Larry Green. And one of the things he talked about in a 2007 lecture to CDC, he said that if you want more evidence-based practice, you need more practice-based evidence. And that struck me. One of the things he talked about in that presentation was that we must make research findings actually usable and relevant within settings. And that makes a lot of sense, but it's so difficult to do, particularly when you're working with limited budgets. If you don't have tools, if you don't have money to actually get some of the data that you really need, you're really at a standstill. And so one of the things that we've done at the Ohio Department of Health is actually provided tools not only for our partners inside of our agency, but also in the local communities to help them make data-driven decisions. Now, I have to tell you that if you want to get funded by anything or anybody in this day and age, you have to make a compelling case that not only do you understand evidence-based information, but you're incorporating that into your interventions. But how does that really reflect to what you actually do if and when you get funded? So just to talk about the benefits of market research and technology. In 2003, I was the director of health promotion. And one of the things that we did is we invested in market research technology. And the reason why we did that, because for one hand, we would say, well, let's get people to eat fresh fruits and vegetables. And again, it makes sense. We know the benefits of that. We had a BRFS data to show us exactly where it was and what had happened. But we had the inability to go down to lower levels of geography to really do what we need to do in terms of design our intervention. The other thing that we need to do is to actually be able to combine different types of data so we can get a three-dimensional picture of what was actually going on at the local level. So it was not just good enough for us in our 88 counties to have data at the state level. We really need to understand what was going on in local communities and how could we input that data to any system that we were using to really, really make some good decisions. In addition to that, we talked about wanting to create behaviors conducive to health and also environments, but what power did we actually have to predict exactly what behaviors would happen as opposed to the ones that we knew were going on just based on our surveillance data? And so we also need to actually make sure that we could effectively communicate with decision makers. So I want to apply some of what I just talked about to food deserts. And before I do that, I want you all to think about some of the information you may have gotten in the mail. Think about those flyers that you have no idea where they came from. It could be for lipstick, it could be for soap. And if you think about that, it's about the power of market technology. Think about the clothes you wear, the car you drive, even the food that you eat. It's not just a good function of your really good taste. But it is about the fact that marketers and Fortune 100 companies know more about you than you may think. Not only do they know what you're going to buy today, they're predicting what you're going to buy in 5 years. They know what populations may be shifting in 5 years. And so we said to ourselves at the Ohio Department of Health, what could we do? Could we harness that information? Instead of us selling potato chips or cars or sneakers, could we harness that data and that power to actually be able to make decisions that result in the better health of our communities. And so that's what we want to do, and I want to show you how we did that through this. Now, I only have a few slides, and they're going to get very busy. But when we start thinking about food deserts, USAID talks about the fact that if you define a food desert, you have to have a high poverty rate, low, medium family income, and you have to have a certain percentage of the residents who live at a certain distance from a full-service supermarket. Now, we know if that is the definition, how does that apply to any given community in any place in the United States? Do we have the power to actually understand the extent to which this definition actually applies? What I'd like to do is, before I show you the power of the market technology, I'd like to go over this model. Every business in the United States is based on a classification code. Supermarkets, car dealerships, everyone has a code. And so if you know the code of a particular business, you can track where it is. Now, when we start talking about food deserts, and we start talking about the availability of stores that may or may not sell close and nutritious food. Have you ever gone to a place and it said such and such supermarket, and you were looking like, that doesn't look like a supermarket, it might be a mom and pop store? It's not just enough to know whether or not a community actually has a supermarket or not. You also have to be able to understand exactly the square footage. What are the characteristics of that particular business? Because everybody who says they're a supermarket is not a supermarket. So in this model, model A, you're gonna actually see some smaller grocery stores that's represented by that little square box. Think of those as your mom and pop stores. Model B are your basically full service grocery stores. And then Model D are those big, super gigantic stores that you can get everything from oil to grapes. Okay? So what does that look like in terms of that definition that we just talked about?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Here I'm showing you a very busy map. But what it is a map of Columbus, Ohio, where I live, and the shading are census tracts. Now, we all know the census tracts contain anywhere from 1,200 people to 8,000 with an optimum size of 4,000. What I want you to understand about this particular slide is that the darker shade of orange that you see are the census tracts that have households below the poverty level. And then what I did is I said, well, let me see exactly where these different types of grocery stores or grocery store businesses exist relative to where the lowest income communities live. Now, this is a view of about, I would say, we're about 30 feet up in the air. And you see a number of the different mom and pop stores, and then you, again, see the very large stores. But let's take a closer look. And when we do that, this is, again, a very high poverty census tract area. And you look at the proliferation of mom and pop stores, and then look to see if there are any large service grocery stores. I'm going to step out from the podium for just a second, and just to be able to show you. Can y'all hear me?
Yeah.
All right. One grocery store, the larger grocery store you have is right there. And look how far it is from the communities that actually have the highest census tracts, high poverty census tracts. Now, when we actually talk about food deserts, folks understand that it's, you know, they're challenging. We understand the health risk about it. But when you show these types of maps to decision makers, the story changes. In fact, when you start to show this type of information to local communities, a light comes on. They already know that they live in a food desert. They already know that some of the stores that they say are supermarkets aren't supermarkets. But what information are we really giving them to go to a decision maker and argue on the benefit or the best, what are the benefit in terms of what they think needs to happen? Here's one other thing. When we talk about food deserts and public health, we talk about the human rights angle. And we should, because no one should live in a community who don't have access to fresh fruits and vegetables. But how would you communicate that to a grocer who says, I need to come in and my mission is to make money? What evidence do we actually have to be able to say, not only should you do the human rights piece in terms of making sure people have good food, but you also can make a profit? We usually don't make that argument. We cannot make the argument because we tend not to have the data to make that argument. Here's another one. This is the same data, same types of data. You see the very high poverty census tract, and you see no full service grocery stores. Actually, I did the same analysis for a speech I did in DC. Every city that you have, I can do the same type of analysis. What does that mean for us in public health? It means that now we have tools that actually can make a more compelling argument to decision makers, even legislators. No one wants to actually see this type of thing going on in their district. Now, there's a couple other things that I want to share, and then I will close. One of the most promising things that we have about this data is also consumption variables. And the reason I want to actually be able to show you this is because not only can I tell you where the food deserts live, but I can tell you the likelihood of what the target audience will buy. I can tell you exactly what they're actually buying. So when we start thinking about, for example, we go into a community, we see there's an obvious food desert. We actually go to a grocery and say, you need to come in here, and we really need you to put a store in this area because the folks need to actually have fresh fruits and vegetables, a healthy food. You will also have a profit. If our argument stops there, we've lost the battle. But if we can start to show that per capita, what families are spending on milk, how they're actually going out of their community to buy fruits and vegetables, where they can actually keep that money in their communities and the business can make a profit. Now we have a different type of conversation. And just because you build it doesn't mean that they'll pump. So what we need to do is be able to say, come up with plans to say, if you build it, this is what we're going to actually have to do to make your business profitable, to have a win-win situation for the community. But we can't do it just with the public health data that we typically use. The reason why I'm showing this map is because through the Director of Health Promotion and Education, we realize that state health departments just having this information on our own is not going to do the communities any good. And so one of the things that we've done in our organization is we've actually taken this market research technology and we're making it available to other state health departments so that they can then be able to not only harness this power, but more importantly, share it with the local communities so that they can then begin to formulate the type of arguments they need to address, in this particular case, the problem of food deserts. Is it making sense? Y'all all right? Because everybody's quiet. So I want to, okay, almost done. Okay, so in terms of this information, not only can we identify specific areas that have food deserts, but more importantly, that we can empower community personnel and public health personnel to articulate things they never really had the power to articulate before. Now, we start talking about communicating with decision makers. There's one thing that I think that we need to talk about as it relates to the information they need. Frederick Douglass said once that power conceives nothing without a demand. Never has and never will. And he was very right about that. But if we're actually going to talk about power conceives nothing without the demand, we need to make sure that that demand is well-informed, well-intentioned, and has evidence that shows that the demand is in the best interest of both parties involved. And if you don't actually have compelling evidence to show why someone should do the right thing, they'll continue to do the same thing. And that's it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Being kicked out by the 4 o'clock session. Is that a 4 o'clock session?